talking about scared, are you scared? Some of you who are new to this, I think, whoa, this is too much for you talking about. So I hope you don't think like that, because one of the points of this, purposes of this, is to make you think about life, yeah, and to reflect on it. I'm not gonna, you don't have to take on board everything I say and say, yes, that's the absolute truth. Just to reflect about these things and to see if that makes sense. And if that do make sense, then gradually you're going to reap the benefits of this. This is kind of the purpose of this. So don't take it too seriously. Maybe yeah, I sound a bit too serious. Actually, take it seriously. Don't take it seriously the wrong way. That's what I'm trying to say, I suppose. So the middle way, yeah, and chucking away the two opposites, which is like indulging the body on the one hand and then causing the body to suffer on the other hand. And the purpose of this, as I said yesterday, is that when you don't torture the body and you don't indulge the body becomes irrelevant. The body is only relevant because you are getting some pleasure out of it, or if you're getting pain out of it, it's also relevant because you want to get rid of the pain. If there's no pleasure and no pain, the body is kind of, who cares about the body? So that's why the body has to fall away in your meditation when you follow this idea of the middle way. This is why the painful path doesn't work, and also why indulgence doesn't work. It's quite logical when you think about it in the right way, but you kind of have to understand the ideas behind it. So reflect on this when you do your meditation practice, to find that beautiful balance in between, where you are at ease, the body is relaxed, you're feeling good about yourself, but you're not indulging. Yeah, and on a retreat like this, you're not really going to be indulging all that much, so make sure you are at ease and you're comfortable, then you are on the right track. You will notice one of the things that is interesting about the Vinaya of the monastic rules, is how the Buddha always gives exemptions from the rules. Not always, but usually gives exemptions from the rules if there is a problem. So if you are sick or you are ill as a monastic, and you don't have to follow certain rules, yeah, because illness is always a problem. If you're ill, you can't really practice. Then you can help yourself to recover. Certain rules are not applied when you do that. So this is kind of something you see throughout the Buddha's teaching, the idea of finding that balance, finding that middle way. So watch out for the mind which wants to go to the extremes or the opposites, because the middle way is where all the fun is to be had. You want to have fun, but you want to just be really boring and kind of bland. That's the choice. Yeah? So, and that middle way, that is the one that gives vision and knowledge, leads to peace, yeah, upasama is peace, direct knowledge, abhidhya, awakening, awakening here is sambodhi, and then extinguishment. You know what extinguishment is? What Pali word is behind extinguishment? Nibbana. Nirvana is behind that one. This is one of those things, isn't that it's very useful to translate these words. Sometimes you'll find that Nibbana is not translated in the suttas. That actually is a very bad idea, because it means that people tend to think they know what Nibbana is without really knowing it, and they kind of have all kinds of ideas. But if you say extinguishment, it gives a clear idea of what it means already. Something is being extinguished. And the main thing that is being extinguished is dukkha, is suffering. That's the main thing. That's kind of the way to look at this. So that is the Buddhist middle way, and then the Buddha spells it out in a little bit more clearly here. What is that middle way? It is simply this Noble Eightfold Path. Right view, right thought, or maybe right intention, or right aim, or whatever you want to call it, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. Again, if you see immersion, there's only one person in the non-universe who translates samadhi as immersion, and that is Anasudato. If you see immersion, so you are Anasudato. This is one of the giveaways. And honestly, I'm not a real fan of immersion. To me, it is too technical and too highfalutin, you know, a bit too kind of philosophical. A lot of people don't even know what it means. And even if you know what it means, it doesn't really grab you. Yeah, it's not really something you can relate to very easily. There is something about it which is very nice, because it says something about samadhi, the fact that you are immersed means that you are like, if you immerse something in water, it means you put it completely fully inside the water. Yeah? You immerse, like if you go into a bathtub and you immerse yourself, it means you go completely inside the water. Yeah? In that sense, it's quite nice, and it tells you something about the idea of samadhi, where you go completely inside of yourself, like a cocoon, where you are completely, the world outside is completely gone, yeah, it's only you're within yourself. So it says something about the idea of samadhi, but I like it in some ways, but to me, in my mind, it's a little bit too technical, and I prefer Ajahn Brahm's translation, which is stillness, which in my mind is preferable, because stillness is something powerful. It's something which relates to you straight away. You know that stillness is beautiful. You know that stillness is nice. You know that it actually works. So we all know that. Whereas immersion is not so obvious that it's positive or negative. You have to think about it for a while to understand it. I prefer straightforward terms. I tried to convince Ajahn Siddhartha that he had gone wrong on this one. To no avail. I cannot convince him. Sometimes you just have to give up if you have a kind of, okay, whatever, shrug your shoulder again. So that is the Noble Eightfold Path, yeah, and you will see, as I mentioned before, it starts with right view. This is kind of one of the very important points here. And without our right view, nothing really happens. So working on right view and reflecting on that, very important part of what we do as someone who takes the Buddhist path seriously. Not just the fact that we are Buddhists, but when we actually take the path seriously and we're trying to practice in accordance with it. So that is the Noble Eightfold Path. I'm going to come back to this later on. I'm not going to talk about it too much now, because this is, of course, the fourth of the Four Noble Truths. So I'll talk about it a bit more towards the end of the retreat. But for now, I'm just going to leave it to one side. Now I want to come back to the first Noble Truth. The Noble Truth of Suffering. Now this is the Noble Truth of Suffering. Rebirth is suffering. Old age is suffering. Illness is suffering. Death is suffering. Association with the dislike is suffering. Separation from the light is suffering. Not getting what you want is suffering. It breathes the five grasping aggregates are suffering. So this is the Noble Truth of Suffering. And the first thing that people often say about Buddhism is that it is a very pessimistic religion. All this talk about suffering. Is that right? Is it pessimistic? Okay, someone disagrees over there. Yeah, it's not really, I don't think it's pessimistic at all. I think the point about Buddhism is that it's supposed to be realistic. Yeah? And there's no point in being optimistic and not being realistic. Because if you are optimistic, but it's not based on reality, on realism, you're going to get very disappointed down the track. You are optimistic about something which actually turns out to be wrong. Yeah, it means that you are deluded. Your optimism is deluded. No point in having deluded optimism. No point in being optimistic for the sake of it. Realism is what really matters. Because once you are realistic about things, once you see life for what it actually is, then you can use that in your outlook, in how you deal with the world. You can take that as a foundation for how you live your life. Then you can become optimistic, because you are facing your life on reality. Then you can find some real solutions, some real ways out of the predicament or the problem that you are in. So actually being realistic should always be the foundation. If you're not realistic, you're basically deluded. If you are deluded, then you're walking around in the dark. If you walk around in the dark, you're going to hurt yourself. That's the nature of walking around in the dark. You need light to be able to see it. You need light to be able to work, to believe properly. So this is, realism is by far the most important thing. And then we can become optimistic, because then we can find the path out of the problem. And that is really what matters. So if people say that you're pessimistic because you are a Buddhist, you can reject that outright and tell them, I'm realistic. And we can ask them whether they are realistic. and see what that's like. No, don't do that. Don't be too naughty. If you're too naughty, you'll be like fire. So be careful with being naughty. So it's fun to be naughty sometimes, but sometimes it can backfire. So you've got to be careful with that. So what does it mean, this idea of suffering? It is very, very profound. And it starts off with the obvious way that things are suffering, yeah? And it goes to deeper and deeper aspects. The last one there, in brief, the five grasping aggregates of suffering is the most profound way to think about suffering. Yeah? But even understanding the first things here actually is quite difficult. You may think that you know that old age is suffering. You may think that you know that dying is suffering. Yeah, obviously, of course, dying is suffering. You may think you know that. But actually, fully understanding that is actually quite hard. And I was reading some research that was done recently on dying. And one of the things that they found out, I think, was done at the university in the U.S. somewhere. And what they had discovered, was it in the U.S.? I can't remember where it was done. What they discovered was that most people, when they hear about dying, yeah, it is always about someone else. It's like it doesn't relate to me, yeah, it relates to someone else. You read about in the newspaper, oh yeah, this person died, oh yeah, it has nothing to do with me. Yeah. It has to do with you, that's the whole point. If other people can die, you can die too. So whenever you see someone else dying, that could be you, right there. One day it's going to be you in that newspaper. Yeah, this is kind of the point. So remember, you are no different. We think that somehow we are different. You think that person was stupid, yeah? They kind of went to the wrong place at the wrong time, that's how they died. Actually, we all have that inherent possibility of dying inside of us at all times. We are no different. So we need to stop being kind of in denial about this, actually take it on board. And when you start taking it on board, it actually becomes very beautiful. Because you start to live more fully. You start to come into the present moment. You start to reject all the nonsense in the world. And you start to live a more spiritual life as a consequence. The idea of death is one of the most spiritual thoughts you can have. And Buddha emphasized this so much in the suttas. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm forgetting the very first part here, which is that rebirth is suffering. Perhaps you are surprised at that translation, because usually what you hear is that birth is suffering. Jati pituka, jati means birth. P means also, because these are all connected, dukkha is also suffering. So why rebirth? And there's two points to this. And one point is that in Buddhism, every birth is also a rebirth. There's no such thing as birth without rebirth. So you might as well say, call it rebirth, let's call it birth. And you are bringing out a very important point, because especially, I don't know what it's like exactly in Hong Kong, probably a lot of diversity in Hong Kong, but in the West, for example, that, you know, where I come from in Norway, people have no idea about rebirth. So if you say birth, they have no idea that you actually mean rebirth. Whereas in ancient India, if someone says rebirth straight away, they know this also means rebirth. If you say birth, it means rebirth as well. So for that reason, sometimes you have to translate differently, because the audience you're trying to reach is different. We live at a different time, in a different culture. So to reach people, you have to say things differently. In India, ancient India, birth and rebirth are synonymous. They mean the same thing. But there's another reason why this is so important, and that is because remember the idea of the first noble truth, suffering. The idea of Buddhism is to overcome suffering. This is kind of the whole point of the Buddhist path. The second noble truth is about the cause of suffering. The third noble truth is about overcoming suffering. Yeah? And the suffering that we try to overcome is the suffering in the first noble truth. This is the definition of suffering. This is what we're trying to overcome. So if birth, jati means birth, it must refer to rebirth, because that's the only birth you can overcome. You cannot overcome the birth of this life. You're already born, unless you go back in time. But there's nothing in Buddhism about going back in time. That's more like science fiction. But nothing about that. So it must mean future birth. And because it must mean future birth, it must refer to rebirth. It's the only birth you can overcome is future birth. So it must refer to that in this context, and because it refers to that, rebirth is the right way of translating it. Am I making sense? What I'm saying? Yeah? Okay. I sometimes I'm afraid of losing people a little bit, which is okay. If you feel a bit lost sometimes, don't worry. Everyone feels a bit lost sometimes. We've all been there. Yeah, when we started out, so it's all right. And please ask questions. Don't be afraid of asking stupid questions. Usually people are afraid, oh, I know so little. I'm really afraid of asking, what if my question is really stupid? Everybody else understands except me. That's how people often think. Yeah, I know, because I think like that myself, so I know what it is like. Yeah. Everybody thinks a bit like that. But don't be afraid of asking questions. Don't think that your question is stupid. Yeah? If your question is stupid, usually it's a very good one, because everyone probably has that question. So please just be asking that. So rebirth is suffering here. So why is rebirth suffering here? What is going on here? What is the problem with this? And there's many ways of looking at this. And one is just the idea that the very fact of being born is unpleasant. Yeah, you can imagine being born and you're in your mummy's tummy, yeah, everything is very nice, your mummy looks after you, and she's careful because she's pregnant, and you're kind of nice and warm, and there, the temperature is just right, the food just comes automatically, yeah, it's kind of, at least if you have a good mother, yeah, then everything kind of happens in the right way, and everything's right. And suddenly you come into the world, yeah, by cold outside, yeah, and kind of, you no longer have your mother, it's no longer so close, it's a kind of traumatic experience, I can imagine, to get born into the world there. So I think that is also what is meant by this. Just the idea of being born is probably problematic in its own right. But of course, when the Buddha talks, it is more profound than that. Yeah, it is more difficult. And one of the things about birth, if you understand the process of how rebirth happens, you die, and after you die, you kind of, you hang out in some kind of intermediate existence. And for a while, if you kind of read some of the stories about near-death experience, all these kind of things, that's what seems to be happening. And then there comes a point where you have to be reborn. Yeah, and one of the things about the near-death experience is that very often they're very pleasant. Finally, you get rid of the body. The body was so heavy, especially towards the end of your life, very sick and very bad. You get rid of it. And you feel so free because of that near-death experience. And then you have to be reborn, going back into a body again. And often that is a very painful experience. There is a story that I remember reading many years ago, made a big impact on me at the time. And this was a woman in the United States. She had some kind of aneurysm in the brain, some kind of big assembly of blood in the middle of the brain. And if that were to burst, she would die very quickly, so they had to operate her. But it was a very difficult operation because it was like in the brain somewhere. So they had to cool her down to about 17 degrees. Yeah, very, very cold. And they had to tap out all the blood out of her body. And then they had to kind of operate on her. It was a very kind of tricky, very long operation, 17 hours or something like that. Very, very tricky operation. And while this happened, she had this out-of-body experience. And she said, wow, so nice to get out of this body. Yeah, and she felt so light and so happy. It's a very common experience when you have these kind of near-death experiences. But then there came a point, the operation happened to be successful, even though there was a very low chance of it. And then, when she was going to go back into the body again, she said it was the most awful, terrible experience. Especially because her body had been cooled down to 17 degrees. She said it was like coming back into a refrigerator. Because you had to go back into this refrigerator, yeah? It's not very nice if your whole body feels like a refrigerator. It's a very traumatic, difficult experience to go back into the body again. So this is the idea of rebirth. You don't really want to go back into a body again. You understand the pain of the body. You only understand it when you are released from it. And then you don't want to go back into it again. This is another thing, a problem about rebirth. Yeah? Another thing which can happen, I think, to some people in this rebirth process is that at that moment, as when you are kind of between two lives, this is goes against the traditional Theravada view, because according to the traditional Theravada view, which you may know, that you go from one life, bang, into the next life straight away, there's no intermediate. But I actually think that's wrong. I think that goes against the way the Buddha speaks and the suttas. This is just a traditional Theravada view. Many other schools of Buddhism have a different view to this. I try to follow the Buddha as best as I can, not the word of the Katavatu or the Abhidhamma, which sometimes is followed. So there is like this intermediate existence, and at that point, yeah, you can start to begin an understanding of life, because you have just died and you've got into there, and suddenly you are about to take a rebirth. So maybe for the first time in your life, you get this feeling for this whole process of rebirth, how you have died in one life, and how you are about to be reborn in your next life. For the first time, you see this cycle, yeah, you see from the one point of view of this life being finished and the next life starting. Because you see it happening in this life, you can infer, you can understand that this cycle must be continued like that. It must come, if it happens one time, presumably it has happened before. Yeah. So for the first time, perhaps, you get this feeling of what samsara is all about, this eternal roaming around from one life to the next one. You can actually see it for the first time. Then you can see the problem that this actually is. Yeah? And then you get this kind of sense of aversion, and you get this feeling that this is a trap, that you're getting trapped into the new life. And for those of you who haven't been to these retreats before, because there's a story which Ram told many years ago, this was apparently a story from a newspaper in America or something like that. I don't know how, what everything's been happening in America and why. We should have more. But so this story was a story of a baby that was just born. Yeah, this baby just kind of come out of a kind of been born into the world. And as soon as it's born, apparently, it's opened its mouth and it says, "Oh no, not again." It's cool, isn't it? And because that is exactly what kind of is supposed to happen. Yeah, you're in this, maybe that it has also just been born into that body. I don't know how the rebirth process happens in all cases. But it's that vision of samsara, the vision that you are going round and round, suddenly dawns on you that this is just going on and on and on. There's no end in sight. And you're going to be carrying out the same things that you did before in this life. Oh no, not again. And this is the reason. The problem with this is that the reason why we feel that life is important, that the things we do are significant, that there is a purpose to life, the reason why we feel this way is in large part because we only see this one life. If we had seen the reality of things, it would look very different. It would look, you know, once you have done the same thing a million times, same mistakes, same problems, yeah, every life you think, yeah, I'm going to find the perfect relationship. Yeah, I'm going to find the right person. Every night you're disappointed. Then you get reborn again. Hope is always more powerful than experience. Yeah, hope ever renews itself. But actually, it turns out not work out. Sometimes you have a good relationship. There are sometimes good relationships in this world, but the majority of relationships are not all that great. Every time it feels like your life is going to be meaningful. Every time it feels that you are going to something purposeful is happening in your life. And every time, you are basically disappointed. And after a million times, then it's time to rethink. Yeah? It's time to kind of look at things in a different way. Yeah? This is the Buddhist outlook. Yeah? It sounds really grim. It sounds really pessimistic. Yeah? But of course, there is a solution to this. And this is why Buddhism, in the end, actually is optimistic and positive. Yeah? And this is also, you know, one of the nice little suttas, one of the nice little discourses that we find is where Venerable Sariputta is asked by another person, what is suffering? What is happiness? And he gives the answer. The answer is, rebirth is suffering. Not to be reborn is happiness. It's as simple as that. Yeah? Very straightforward, but it really relies on this idea of rebirth. Relies on the idea of this cycle of birth to be able to understand what is going on. And I think that ultimately may be the reason why it is put in there, the idea of rebirth. It may be put in there precisely to remind us of the cycle of things going on, because it actually tells us something about the nature of life, how it carries on like this. So that is rebirth is suffering. Yeah, it is. There's a lot going on there, this is of course why these things are interesting. So let's just carry on a little bit longer, otherwise we will never get through the suttas. And so let's have a quick look at the next one here as well. These are fairly simple, the next two, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Old age is suffering. Is that true? Probably, yeah. I would say so. I mean, I'm getting pretty old now. Not super ancient, but getting much older than I used to be anyway. And you can just feel that things are gradually deteriorating. Only a few years ago, I didn't need any glasses. Now I can't see anything like glasses anymore. I have to see this blur. This kind of so, yeah, the eyes are kind of going out. Yeah, this is kind of one of the first things to happen. And then I'm very kindly, so I think there's someone in Hong Kong who offered me these glasses. Yeah, very kindly done that. Get a pair of glasses. So, but this deterioration of the body, and sometimes we forget that. Especially the younger you are, the harder it is to imagine that we're going to get older. But really, it is just around the corner. It happens so fast. And one way of looking at this, if you are young, is to remember that old age is the flip side of youth. Yeah, if you're young, you have to get older. The only thing worse than not getting, the only thing worse than getting old is not getting old. Yeah, dying, in other words, dying when you're young. That's the only thing worse than anything. So if you are young, you're going to get older. It's already inside of you. Old age is right here. It is part of who you are. So when you look at yourself in the mirror and you can see yourself getting older, you see the gray hairs coming out, the wrinkles coming out. If you feel bad about it, it means you haven't really fully understood the idea of old age. If you see these things coming and you kind of shrug your shoulders, yeah, what did I expect? Of course it's going to happen. Then you have really taken it on board 100%. Old age is part of who we are. Part and parcel of what's going to happen. You're going to get weaker and weaker. You're going to gradually fall apart until one day you die. This is the nature of being born into this world. And it's okay. Yeah, just the way things are. And when you do that, when you think like that, it actually changes your attitude to things because you understand how out of control everything is, how it kind of goes down the drain. Beauty turns gradually into something less beautiful, and gradually until you end up under somewhere, eaten by worms or whatever, underground. This is the nature of the body here. And very useful because it makes the mind clear. It reduces your attachments to the body here. It takes away this, the sense of there being something important about being young or whatever. And when you take away these delusions, these attachments to things, it makes you much more clear about life. And then when you're not intoxicated by these things, you gain clarity. Well, it helps you in your meditation practice. So good to contemplate old age and think of it as already part of you. When you see an old person, yeah, really, really old, like lying on the deathbed, for example, my own father passed away about, 7 months ago or something? Yeah. And towards the end, he didn't get all that ancient because he actually fell down eventually and died from a fall instead of actually from his illness. But towards the end, still looking very frail and very bad. Yeah, same thing with my sister, she did die of old age, but she died of cancer. Yeah. And towards the end, cancer really, it kind of destroys the body. Yeah, towards the very end, you look really terrible when you have cancer, completely emaciated, and really the body just deteriorating really, really badly. And when you see that, it kind of shocks you. Are you ready to be like that? You have to be ready to be like that. This is part of you. It's already waiting inside of you, waiting to come out. We're all going to be there. When you see a very old person, don't feel aversion. Feel instead, yeah, we all have this nature, we're all going to go there. I too have this nature. Does it feel okay? If it feels okay, then there is no problem. So this is the contemplation of old age. Take away some of the kind of delusions about life. Remember that we're all heading in that direction. The same thing with illness. The illness is very similar to the idea of old age. Yeah, this is one of those important things to remember, that illness or sickness is just as much part of life as being healthy. The reason we're talking about health is because illness is also part of life. Again, two sides of the same coin. And there's always Adam Brown, he's the master of kind of these catchphrases. And so here, Adam Brown always says, when you go to the doctor, you should not tell the doctor something is wrong with me. You should tell the doctor, doctor, something is right with me. I'm sick again today. And then the doctor looks at you and he wonders whether you're going crazy or not. But that's a different matter. But so this is kind of the point. There's nothing has gone wrong when you are sick. But we think something has gone wrong because of that. We get upset and we get angry about it, but actually nothing has gone wrong. We should expect to get ill every now and again. And sometimes when you get ill, I don't get ill very often, I've got quite a strong health, it seems, but sometimes you get ill, because that's just the nature of things. And it's a bit terrible when you get sick. It feels really awful when you have a fever and you just have to lie there, you can't really move because it just feels so terrible. And you realize it's a part of the suffering of life. Something is right. Well, if this is right, I don't want to have it. I want to get out of this. This is the idea of sickness. And again, it was very powerful. Sometimes we need to see these things very close up for them to be powerful for us. When I saw my sister, because of course you know your sister very well, you know her history, you know what she, you know all the things that she has done. And when you know somebody very personally like that, it's much more powerful. To see my own sister die in this way through cancer was much more powerful than I had expected. You think that you have reflected on these things, but actually sometimes you need that reminder close up, face to face, to really see things clearly. That is a very powerful reminder that so much of the Dhamma is about reflection. You need to reflect on these things again and again. It's good to actually see old people up close. It's good to see ill people up close. When anyone in your family gets very sick or ill or they die or whatever, take it as something very spiritual, something that can enable you to grow. Don't just sorrow and so sad when someone is dying. Actually, thank them. Thank them for giving you a teaching about the realities of life. And then you can have a positive attitude even to the most difficult times. And it was very interesting when my sister died. I didn't really feel very sad, well, for many reasons. But one of the reasons was simply that, she's been a good person, she's lived a pretty good life, she's had all the things that she wanted. But what I really felt was the powerful spiritual teaching in someone close to dying. And I used the opportunity to try to do the right thing, to kind of help her a little bit, all these kind of things. And that is the power of these things. They can be very, very useful if we use them in the right way. And if we use them in the wrong way, they become sad. But if used spiritually, they become very, very powerful. So use these opportunities in a skillful way. When someone in your family is in hospital, maybe they are dying, maybe they are old, who knows what, don't go there and cry. Go there and talk to them. Go there and learn from the experience and know that you have the same nature. This is the way of life. Life can be tough sometimes, but actually, there's nothing wrong with getting old, nothing wrong with getting sick, nothing wrong with dying. This is where we're all heading down the track. And if you have the right attitude towards these things, what happens is that you start to think about life in a new way, and you start to move towards the spiritual path. Because you understand that all life is like this. There's no escape from this. It's always just going to carry on like this in the same way. You're going to have to try to find happiness and meaning elsewhere, not in these superficial things. And then it enables your spiritual path. That right view of old age and illness and death, it enables you to practice the spiritual life. Because you understand that in the worldly life, it all ends in this way, which is very sad unless you have spiritual practice instead. So that is the idea of illness and old age. Please reflect on these things. I will read out the sutta later on, a very short one, where the Buddha talks about the power of reflection and the power of thinking about things in the right way. And when you do that, then this is one of the most important ways of enhancing your spiritual practice. Okay, so I hope you are not depressed. Are you depressed now? Are you very sad? Okay, good. It is it's very, one of the things I really like about Ajahn Brahm is that he's a very happy person, always telling jokes, always messing around, always kind of doing a thing. And he says, life is suffering. Ha ha ha. What a wonderful thing it is, yeah? But this is kind of the beautiful thing about life. And this is one of those things you find in the sutras. What a noble one says is happiness, the rest of the world says is suffering. Yeah? What a noble one says is suffering, the rest of the world says happiness. So you have the opposite way of looking at the world. Yeah? What is that saying again? Oh, what joy to know that there is no happiness in the world. Yeah, isn't that a beautiful saying? Oh, what joy to know that there's no happiness in the world. You look for happiness elsewhere. You don't look for happiness where there is real happiness. And you find real joy and happiness. And that, of course, is the spiritual practice. So even though this mind may sound a bit like a downer sometimes, actually it is all pointing to something else. It is pointing to a different way of approaching life. And this is the purpose of this. This is the point of this exercise in trying to have right view. Anyway, now we're going to have another kind of happiness that is called lunch happiness. you're going to have lunch a little bit later, and I'm going to have lunch a little bit sooner. Yeah, so have a nice lunch, and please enjoy your food, and don't kind of mix it all up in a bucket and make it really bad, make it enjoyable, and then you won't be thinking so much about food this afternoon, you can still carry on with your practice. So we'll see you back again at 3 o'clock, and in the meantime, keep on enjoying yourself.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.